If you're listening to this podcast, that means you're listening to the Danger Splosion podcast feed, which is absolutely fine. Nothing wrong with that. You are more than welcome to continue to listen to this feed. However, I would recommend that you also follow the Headcanon podcast feed. One reason being is that we have limited storage on our Danger Explosion feed. We're only going to have a few episodes up at a time, whereas you can explore the entire history, the entire back catalog of Headcanon in the Headcanon feed. You can find that in any podcatcher, whether it's Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, whatever your favorite podcatcher may be, you will find the Headcanon podcast feed. You can also find us on social media. We're on Facebook at Danger Explosion Presents Headcanon Pod, on Instagram at Headcanon Pod. We're on Twitter at Horror Movie Pod. And you can always join the conversation on the subreddit r/horror movie pod. So follow us on social media, follow the Headcanon feed in your favorite podcatcher, and please enjoy this episode of Headcanon.
Wanna play a game? Do you like scary movies? Do you wanna eat some brains? Is your chainsaw arm groovy? How bloodthirsty could a talking plant be? Eat your liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Come play with us forever, cause down here we all float. I never drink wine, so you're gonna need a bigger boat. Or a throat to choke, whether you're in the prim or dairy. Got red rum where you bled from, put your dead son in a cemetery. It's him or Carrie, be very afraid. You'll be our number one fan and get carried away. All work and no play, you know it always means you're in trouble, son. I came to chew gum and kick ass and I'm all out of bubble gum. What if Quint killed Jaws' father? What if the Blob's body was marijuana? What if the leprechaun got a job as a bank guard? What if the wolfman had a cowbell instead of an arm? Every scary movie made since Oscar Wilde was writing letters had canon to watch them all and tell you how to make them better. So put your earbuds in and forget what you're planning. It's time to take our heads and shoot them out of a cannon.
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 Headcanon.
Welcome to Headcanon. Tonight we have a very special show, a couple special guests, Mr. Charlie Lind, a gentleman we know, Brent and I both know from Comedy Sports Indianapolis from back in the day. He's been a guest before on our previous podcast, Danger Explosion. And then the director of the film we're talking about, Charlie stars in the film, and the director, Mr. Tim Connery. How are you gentlemen doing this evening?
I'm great. Go ahead, Tim.
No, yeah, I think we're both doing really, really good considering the movie, just dropped, you know, very freshly. And, you know, me and Charlie have been going back and forth on text, sharing the good reviews and the bad reviews and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I'm doing great.
Nice. Excellent.
Congratulations on your movie.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a long time coming. I mean, we shot it in 2017 and then
oh wow.
And then like I felt like we were about to release it in like February of 2020 and like COVID kind of like I felt like COVID definitely played a hand in it not being released sooner.
Right.
But here we are.
Right. Yeah, COVID fucked with everything for everybody.
Yeah, it definitely sidelined it for a while. It sidelined a lot of things for a while. You know, I think a lot of releases that potentially weren't going to VOD right away got kind of like rushed to the head of the pack because VOD was such a, you know, in such demand. Mm-hmm. You know, after the first couple lockdowns and shit. So, thank God it's finally out, you know, 4 years later, 4.5 years later after we shot it. So
just in time for this next lockdown.
Yeah, right. You should like re-edit it and recut it for every different variant and just, and you know, so this version is like the Omicron cut, you know, and then the next one will be like, you know, whatever, the
Very
Omega
nice,
cut.
Yeah.
Nice. But so the movie we're talking about is Death to Metal, 2021's Death to Metal. And did this come out
it's yesterday for us, I think, today, but so it was 12/7. Was that when it was released?
Yeah, December 7th, yeah.
Yeah, nice, excellent. And so I'm curious, so what, because I know it's released through pretty much every platform, right? Like Amazon, Google Play, like pretty much anywhere you can demand video, you can get this movie, right?
Yeah, it's out on Vubiquity, it's out on Vudu, it's out on Fios by Verizon. Yeah, all the big hitters there. And then obviously you have Amazon and YouTube. Those are the big ones. Google Play, Xbox.
Pretty much anywhere you can rent or buy iTunes. A movie, it's there. It looks like we got snubbed by PlayStation Network for some reason. I don't know why. We got Xbox, so.
Right, that's what's going on there. That's what matters.
They might have not liked the beginning, you know?
Yes. It's like conflicting with Death to Smoochie that they're trying to push on people.
They are always pushing Death to Smoochie on. Every time I come on, there's like a new sale for a Death to Smoochie.
Yeah. So, well, Charlie, we, like I said, we kind of know you from Comedy Sports, and you're out in LA, and we talked to you, what was it, a few months ago? 6 months ago? 8 months ago?
Yeah.
10 months ago?
Yeah, okay. It was a little bit ago. Wow.
Yeah. So what have you been up to since then? Did you ever?
I had a short that was released that was premiered at the Chinese Theater, and
a baby.
And I had a baby. Well, we already knew that I had a baby by then. And
oh, okay. That's right, 14.
I'm coaching wrestling right now, which is interesting, and so I'm doing a lot of that. And I've been getting more and more auditions, which is kind of good. Which is great, actually. And then that's about it. Just like still doing my best to be a part of, to stay in the game. Doing my best to stay in the game.
Nice. Well, and that's awesome, because that's something, I haven't stepped foot on a stage since COVID hit like 2 years ago. So that's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And then Tim, I'm kind of curious, just for everybody listening, Brent and I just met Tim like 5 minutes ago. So
yeah.
So I'm curious, what's your background? How did you get into this? You know, because I know you've directed at least a couple other things. So yeah, I'm just curious, kind of what your background is and what your experience is with all this.
Yeah, I'll try to tee it all up here without being too long-winded. So I graduated from film school, Columbia College, in Chicago, back in 2009. Mm-hmm. Did a number of shorts around that time. And then I'm from Eastern Iowa, so Dubuque, Iowa, right on the map, where Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois converge on the Mississippi River. That's kind of my turf, my hometown. Mm-hmm. And right after film school, they kept kind of pounding it in our head that no one's going to take you seriously until you make a feature. You got to make a feature. So me and some people that I knew from film school kind of scrapped together some resources and moved back to Dubuque temporarily to do that first feature, which is called Black Web. It's on Amazon Prime for free with ads. It's been up there for a minute, distributed through Gravitas Ventures. And after that, I didn't really know what the hell to do with myself. So I was like, well, that didn't make me any money. So I got to figure out a way to, you know, either make some money shooting videos and doing videos, or find a whole new career. Fortunately, I kind of found a little niche in Eastern Iowa producing commercial and corporate videos, kind of like a higher end take on it, because back then when I was kind of entering the workforce out here, it was just like your standard, like, you know, local TV spots, your car dealerships, shouting at the TVs or shouting at the camera, and nothing too special. Right, so, like,
I'm Gary Bim Bam, and I got 72 cars all stocked up, ready to roll.
I mean, those are pretty fucking cool too, but I just brought something else to the table, a guy that does a bunch of work and marketing stuff for a bigger company here, he saw that film. I had a film festival here locally, and he was like, hey, can you do something like that for us, something higher end, something that looks good? So I brought basically the crew of that first feature back here to do the a campaign for them. And, fast forward 3-4 years, and business is doing pretty good. You know, we're at least staying afloat. We're being able to pay ourselves, and you know, we're kind of chunking through it. And then, you know, I had this idea for a follow-up to Black Web that was just completely 180, because on the festival circuit for that film, if you watch the two films, you know, back to back, you'd think that two different people made these movies, and B, that these two different people hate each other because they're completely different, you know, movies. One's, you know, serious as a heart attack drama with a sci-fi twist, and you know, the other one's death metal, which doesn't take itself too seriously. It's very, you know, it's, you know, almost required that you're playing the drinking game when you're watching it. So but I know I wanted to make, you know, death metal. We had that, we were writing that over a course of me and the co-writer Kevin Kopis from like 2012 up through like a couple of weeks when we started principal photography. We were working on that script, and just wanted to have a lot of fun making it. And you know, I feel like you know, that's kind of the story up until, you know, shooting the movie. So doing a lot of the same kind of stuff now, commercial and corporate videos as the main job, and I'm chipping away on the third feature right now. So
nice. Well, so was this done? Is it kind of the same? So when you're doing commercials and stuff like that in Iowa, is it the same company, kind of the same umbrella that you use to produce this feature film, or are they kind of separate ventures?
They got to be separate, mm-hmm. For just like legal reasons,
right?
So. The good rule of thumb is you tend to want to start, like, and that's why, you know, you see, especially on like indie films, you see like 14 production company like logos, you know, ahead of, you know, you're in the theater and you're like, Jesus Christ, like how many people, you know, had their hand in this? And it's because each person that put a significant amount of money into it wanted, you know, liability basically kind of vacuumed into a limited liability company, so yeah. That, you know, if something were to happen, you know, in the process where the film got sued, you wouldn't be personally liable, or right. Your business wouldn't be personally liable. So every time you make a new movie, you want to, you know, form a new limited liability company just for that movie. But
okay. That makes
sense. Dreamcatcher Productions, which is, you know, the commercial and corporate, always has a stake in these films. Mm-hmm. So
nice.
So it's tricky.
That's interesting. And then, so once you have you know, you've got your movie and you've got it ready to go, is that, do you go out to distributors who then they pass it on to, you know, the Amazon? And I imagine they probably have the mechanisms already in place to kind of shoot that out to Amazon and the other streaming services. Is that kind of how that works? I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's, you know, after we did a couple of bigger film festivals for this, I basically just kind of acted as my own sales agent. I mean, you can hire a sales agent who will take, you know, the old school way with a movie like this is you'd hire a sales agent. They would help you out with assets, whether it's a poster, trailer, and that kind of stuff. And they would take it to a film market. Mm-hmm. And they usually have these film markets, like there's one in Los Angeles, AFM, American Film Market. And then they have, you know, film markets at some of the bigger film festivals like Berlin and Tribeca. And, you know, there's a film market component. That's the old school way of doing it. I just, you know, basically looked up films that were similar in scope and genre of death to metal, and I just saw who distributed them, and I just cold emailed them or cold called them and sent them the trailer and the posters and all that crap that we kind of put together. And, you know, we got, I think it was 3 offers total, and just, nice. You know, picked the one that seemed like had the best resources and was the best fit to release it, which was Wild Eye.
Awesome. Well, and I'm curious where kind of the idea for this movie came from, because it's very much in the vein of, you know, I kind of saw it as a, you know, part of the trajectory of like Evil Dead, Reanimator, Dead Alive, like that kind of just like gleeful, fun, you know, campy, yeah. Gory kind of DNA.
It's been my favorite type of horror movies.
Yeah.
is the one you made.
Yeah, that's good. Wow, thanks.
And he's not just saying that. It's a real thing.
Yeah, you know, it's a love for just, you know, a good blend of comedy and horror. You know, I was growing up, I love all sorts of different horror films, but I was drawn to the horror films that had a comedy backbone to them, you know, like the later Friday the 13th movies, or It seems like as these franchises, especially the franchises that started in like the 80s, they got more comedic undertones and kind of embraced the silliness. Right. I don't know if it's because the producers were just doing more and more coke or what, you know, what the scoop was, right. but they just got more ridiculous.
Yeah. Or if they're just destined to become parodies of themselves at some point, you know, if you can,
right. Like, it's like, what else do we have to say? Like, we might as well, you know, turn Jason into Frankenstein and have him go toe to toe with some paintballers, like whatever, you know. Right. Have the girl have telekinesis.
one of the things I thought was really cool when I first like saw the script and like Tim was kind of like throwing me the script is that I feel like Tim and I have like talked about Tyler Perry before in like the Madea movies where like Tyler Perry knows his audience, and I'm like, this movie has an audience that isn't being tended to right now, and like it would be cool to make a movie that if the right audience gets a hold of it, i.e. like the metal horror community, it's going to, I mean, there's literally like three metal horror movies out there, like,
right? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and fans of the genre are just watching like Mandy on repeat. That's
yeah.
Mandy or Deathgasm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good point, Charlie. It's like, you know, going back to that first feature, I had such a hard time, like, you know, A, getting it distributed, and B, like, kind of explaining what it was, because, you know, I just completely, like, out of film school, just wrote, like, whatever I wanted to write, and then we shot it, and then it was done. Not to say, you know, I mean, you know, it's flawed for sure, but I had a hard time really knowing and didn't really think about what the audience of that film was, so that like the next time around I was like, you know, I know an audience really well because the audience is me, like people who love metal and people who love like frivolous horror films that you can just like crack open, you know, a 12 pack of beer with your buddies and just like, it's on in the background on a Saturday night, and you know, you're joking throughout it and just having a good time, right?
Yeah.
So and it seems like our inclination on that audience is kind of, you know, paying off, and in the reviews and the people I've been talking through doing like the press and stuff leading up to the release, like, you know, a lot of the people that are metalheads or horror lovers and the few people that are both, like, they totally get it. And yeah, like you said, Charlie, like they, you know, they're hungry for these kind of films, because yeah, it's just a segment that, you know, isn't really attended to much.
Yeah.
Tim, I have a question for you and Corey and Brent, sorry to just take over your
position. No, it's all yours.
But, do you feel like you needed that first film to like kind of knock it out of the way? I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you're one of the only people I know that like make movies, legitimately make them. Even like living in Los Angeles, I don't know. So I met one dude through this last film festival that like I saw his movie and I was like, oh my God, I want to be in his movies. And he just cranks them out, and it's just like, it's one of those things where it's like they're all interesting, and I don't think he likes me very much, so it's not gonna happen, but but I'm like, damn, this dude makes movies, that's sick. So it's like, to me it's like did you need that first one to kind of like, I wouldn't say like first pancake, but it's like you make that first pancake and it's like a little abnormal, and you're like, okay, this, so now I know what I'm doing here a little more, and then by the third, yeah, I'm sure like by your movies now, you're just like, your features now, you're just gonna be like, oh yeah, let's do it, let's do this,
toss them in the pan, no problem.
Yeah. You know, yes, obviously, you know, I mean, I think the biggest thing with getting that first pancake on the you know, on the fryer and done and like looking at it is it's so much work to make, you know, a movie, and it's a lot of work to make a feature. And, you know, I think after that, you know, even though the experience wasn't completely like 100% like A, gratifying, and B, you know, like it was kind of a money pit, right? That first feature, I still was so hungry to do it again. You know, I wanted to do something different, obviously. But like, I just knew like, yeah, this is absolutely what I want to fucking do. Right. As I want to make movies. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to make them. You just have to have like the, you know, the people that, that make movies and aren't like A, already plugged into the system, or B, just like rich, or no, like, you know, a rich sugar daddy or something.
Right.
Like they just have to have an appetite to just figure it out. Right. Because there's so many, like, this is a very like triumphant moment in the process, but there's so many moments that are such a drag, and they test you and they try you. Even for like such a fun movie like this, like there was moments even after the movie was done, right? And we had had our festival stuff where I was just like bummed out. I'm like, when is this thing gonna come out? You know, there's so many, you know, stages to it before it gets over the finish line. And I just know, I mean, like, you know, to answer your question, that first feature just informed me, like, you know, this is what I want to be doing, and this is where I want to be doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. So
nice. Well, I'm curious.
It's interesting you say that, because I was like watching the movie Zola. Have you heard of Zola?
Oh, is that about the, like, a true-ish story of the, it was like,
yeah, it's like a Twitter story. It's like based off a Twitter story.
Yeah, I've read about, the like, Twitter
story.
It's about
like a stripper going to Florida or something like that. And yeah, like there's an actress in there, and I'm like, oh man, this girl's great. She's like killing it. She's like coming from nothing or whatever. And she's kind of like rough around the edges. And then I like look her up and I'm like, oh, you're Elvis Presley's granddaughter. That's great.
Right. Yeah. Who, Riley Keough or whatever.
From the bottom here.
Yeah, and I feel like that happens all the time with like musicians and actors. I'm like, oh, who's this person? Where do they come from? And you look it up, and like 75-80% of the time, it's like, oh, their family's been in the business for decades. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Or you're like it's like recently Licorice Pizza, and you're like, oh, new faces, and then you're like, nope, not new faces. Technically not new faces, right, at all.
Nice.
There's a lot of cronyism going on, and then obviously, you know, and people that are already plugged in, they just have access to money, you know. Yeah. And they know that their name, you know, even if they're trying to like push their name like under the rug, where people, it's not like completely evident, they know people are going to sniff that out. Like what's his name, Duncan Jones, you know, like he was really adamant, I think, about keeping, you know, his dad like out of the marketing of Moon, but everyone fucking knew, like, after like,
right,
you know, a year or so, like it's David Bowie's kid. So
yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, and even, yeah, and the money, but also I think maybe even more than that, or at least, and this is just from total outsider's perspective, just the connections, I feel like, just knowing people who know how things work and know how, and so there's not that guesswork, you know, like, you know where to go, you know who to talk to, you know how the machinery works, you know. But I'm curious, how did you two get hooked up? Because you're based in Iowa. Where did you film this, in LA, or how did you guys end up, yeah, how did this all end up coalescing?
Do you want to tell the story, Charlie, about the, I think the first time we met? Do you recall what that
oh, yeah,
like?
I do. So
it's relevant, right?
I think so, yeah. So so my wife and Tim went to college together at Columbia College in Chicago. And by the way, the film was filmed in Dubuque, Iowa.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It was filmed Dubuque and around Dubuque.
Was that, and, so I'm sorry to jump in. So was that record shop, were these places you were like intimately familiar with, Tim? Were these like places you frequented?
To a certain extent, yeah. Like I knew the guys from the record shops called CDs for Change, and there's like a competing record store in town called Moondog Music that I used to go to more as a kid, but CDs for Change just had a better look to it. So mm-hmm. I ended up, which is funny because it's kind of changed now. Because Moondog's got kind of an older guy that's kind of running the show, and now both of those places are just, you know, vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And the buyer at CDs for Change, now I'm only going, you know, because Moondog used to have the better metal CDs, you know, but now CDs for Change has got more of a better variety of vinyl. Anywho.
And yeah, it reminded me of the record stores that I grew up going to in Corey and I were both from Bloomington, Indiana, mm-hmm. where like the IU campus is. And there's a famous one there called Tracks,
yep.
which is pretty similar to that, to the one that you showed. And then there was another one across the street. You remember, Corey? It was one where you kind of like went down some
downstairs.
Steps.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
But like there was not much. There was definitely rhyme and reason to the order of the whole place, but it was just like stacks of things.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to a place on like Shelby and Madison called Second Chance CDs.
Yeah,
and it was like, yeah. But so Lara, my wife, was like, this is my good friend from college. He's coming in town. He is performing with his band Nether Void this like metal show, and Tim is the lead singer of it. And so I kind of knew, like, I knew Tim because I was like, obviously there's like that whole like, oh, you went to college with him. Great. You guys used to hook up. That's cool. You know, type of situation.
Never happened.
Sure. Well, she said you guys kissed. Okay. She said you guys kissed.
Yeah, like on New Year's.
I mean, who hasn't kissed Tim though? I mean, we just met 5 minutes ago and already, you know.
True. Yeah, I'm not mad. I've never been mad about people Lara has kissed in the past. It's not a big deal to me.
But he purposely positioned the camera to show the crib
in the back. Yeah. No. But we go to Reggie's, right? Reggie's just south of the Loop, South Loop, Chicago, to go see Nether Void. And we're like hanging out and drinking like PBRs backstage. I got hammered drunk, but I got to see Tim, like, just where Tim, you know, like, you meet him on a regular day and you're like, this guy is not like a lead singer of a metal band, but then like, you know, you're like watching him on stage and he's like burning a Bible and he's like, coming from this Catholic school. Like he grew up in Catholic school. So like,
some sort of sheep's heads or something, didn't we? Or pig's heads or something.
There was some fucked up shit going on that stage, but I was like hammer drunk. That was like one of those nights where I was just like talking out of my ass, like hammer. And, it was just like an interesting time, but, you know, we came out again when we moved out to LA. We came out and saw Tim, and we've always just kind of like got along, just like easily got along, and easy to get along with, easy to talk to. When I moved to LA, my roommate was the cinematographer of the film, so it was kind of like everything kind of like played on itself, and it was almost like when I auditioned for the film, I didn't ask for a part. I just asked to audition and really, really worked hard to put something in. And honestly, like looking back now, I think about that audition. I'm like, wow, I'm a much better actor now, but I'm really glad Tim took a chance on me then, to have me in the film. But it was really cool to, I never expected to be in the film, but I did. I was really glad to have the opportunity to audition for it, 'cause I really loved the script. I thought it was like, it just fit in really well with things I wanted to do in my career as an actor.
Yeah.
Where does a cast stay in Iowa while you're filming?
Well, So back then, we were on a pretty tight budget. I mean, but there's like, I'm not like in the fucking sticks, you know, like there's like hotels and shit, but I think I made Charlie and like a couple of the sound guys. I mean, like they're in essentially what you'd consider an Airbnb. But it was actually like, I had just moved and had an additional month's rent on a place. And, so it was like empty.
And the AC,
like,
I lived with the AC, sound mixer and the boom operator. And, really interesting, the boom operator, he like purchased a Casper mattress because there's like a 90-day return policy. And a Casper mattress on the ground. And then like,
nice.
When he left, he just like threw it on the porch and like made Casper come bring it, pick it up. It was like so smart of him.
That's brilliant.
To do that. But yeah. Yeah, we lived in this house. It was kind of cool. Yeah.
Things have gotten better, Charlie. So.
Great.
We'll get you out here. Get you out here for another one, and we'll put you up at the Hotel Julian. I got a good rate. I know more people now. You know, I'm doing that LA cronyism, but out here it just takes more time, and things are a little more around the edges. But it's still all about who you fucking know. You know.
Right.
Well, my sister came in town. You had her stay at, because the kid who plays my son. And the film is actually my nephew.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool.
Okay, nice.
That's awesome. I kind of pitched my nephew to Tim because he was kind of having trouble. I think you were having trouble finding people. And I said, hey, my nephew can name every single president.
Yeah, do you call that?
We kind of just went off of that. We kind of just went off, like, him just knowing, like, every single president. So I'm like, he can memorize lines.
Yeah, that's more than what I can do.
We ran into some issues with that. I'd like to talk about that at some point.
Sure.
But yeah.
Yeah, no, it's such a big cast of characters. You know, we cast the main, you know, group, you know, Charlie, Alex, Grace, Dan, and Andrew, you know, very seriously. And we vetted them very seriously. And then, you know, there's like 20 other characters that are like in the scripts, like, you know, either with lines or get killed or whatever. So, you know, we had a lot of roles to fill. So yeah, it was definitely a challenge, you know. And Jimmy, right?
Jimmy, yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy. Yeah, no, that was, I mean, obviously, you know, trying to find, you know, child actors and you know, especially, you know, parents have to be involved legally. You know, they got to be on set and they got to be cool with what's going on. So when you said that, and I had spent some time with Charlie's family out at a couple Indy 500s, which you glossed over, Charlie. That's a big part of our relationship.
Oh, yeah, we did. We, yeah, that's right.
We had three Indy 500s together.
That's so right. Wow. That's right. Yeah.
That turn
where
what,
he
turn
stayed
three?
In my backyard. Yeah, turn three of the snake pit.
Yeah. Completely.
That's all.
When I knew, you know, it was, part of the family, I was like, okay, well, they're going to be cool with, you know, mutated killer priest, mayhem, whatever, you know. So, like, he's hired. Let's go.
Yeah.
Nice.
And Jimmy, it's a poor kid. Like, it's like he spent half of his life right now with a film coming out because he's like 10 now and he was 5 when we shot it. And so he's like been, for 5 years, he's been like telling kids at school that he's in this film.
It's like half his
and
life.
Like, kids are like, yeah, well, show us it, you little nerd, you know?
Oh, man.
No, it's a real movie. I promise, you know?
I hope he just went to school today and like pulled it up on his phone or whatever. Was like, suck it, motherfuckers.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, he's an army brat and he's like moved. So there's like just like a trail of lies, you know? Like,
yeah.
Different areas of Texas.
Yeah. So all the kids he goes to school with now are like, yeah, okay, sure, we just met you, whatever.
Yeah. I feel like he got it like beat out of him to just like never talk about the movie, but now that it's out, he's like, oh, you want to see me in a movie? There's titties. It's probably not like he's 10, so.
Right. Oh, man, that's hilarious. Well, I do want to kind of get into the movie and some of the specifics.
Let's get
of
the
it.
Movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Which it was a fuck ton of fun, man. I really enjoyed it. It was because, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect. You know, I know Charlie. I know he's a good dude. And, you know, but you never know, like, if it's something your friend's like, I'm in, you're like, okay, I don't know what's the quality going to be like. But it was a blast, man. It was so much fun. It was so well done. It looked great.
Yeah. Charlie's been telling us for like 5 years that he's been in a movie, and we were like,
yeah, we didn't believe him.
Sure you are, Charlie.
Yeah,
full of shit.
What is Dubuque? I can't even see it on a map.
It's not a real place. Oh, but no, so there's right at the beginning of the movie, like, you kind of set the tone. You've got the fuck your god song playing, and then immediately they just like throw this kid's book, like throw his Bible down. The guy whips his little dick out. Which I have to, is this
okay? Spoiler alert.
Is that a prosthetic or is that an actual?
Do you want to know? Do you really want to know? Do you want the
Charlie played two roles?
Do you want the dick. Road?
You know, I thought I did until you asked that question. Now I don't know if I do, honestly.
I showed a rough cut to my brother, like, man, like 5 months after, like around Christmas, and he was like the first one to see a rough cut other than the editor. And he asked me that same question. Like, that was the first thing he said after the film wrapped. Like, he didn't bring it up, you know, during like the credits rolled, and he was like, "Is that a real dick?" And I asked him the same question. I was like, "Do you really want to know?" And he's like, "I guess I don't." And then that was, you know, when we got into the other stuff. So
yeah, you know, we'll leave it to the audience's imagination then. But I like, so then we meet the preacher, Kilborn, and I like how he's talking about sin, and specifically he mentions like low-rise jeans, pizza buffets, condom giveaways. He's naming all this ridiculous shit, which I thought was hilarious. And I don't know, dude kind of gave me like Herbert West in The Reanimator vibes a little bit. Did you feel that at all, Brent?
Yeah, I was going to mention that, yeah, I got Reanimator vibes in all of this. Nice. Yeah. It's cool. Not all of it, but just like this guy. Yeah.
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 Yeah. His presence was definitely reminiscent of that. But then I like the line. What's the main character's name? Is it Zeke or Zane?
Zane.
I love, I also really like the line where he goes to meet, like when his girlfriend breaks up with him and she's like, "What's up?" And he's like, "Nothing. Everything is down."
He's supposed to be kind of a dweeb, you know, like, you know, you got to give him an arc, right? You got to give him a story arc.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and there was one point where, you know, because you sympathize with this character, he gets kicked out of his band, his girlfriend leaves him. But then, like, you know, there was a point like around the middle of the movie, I was like, well, all I know about this guy really is everyone's rejecting him. I was like, maybe he sucks. Like, maybe he is just an asshole.
there's supposed to be a lot of parallels, you know, between, you know, I'm not trying to make this like crazy, me and Kevin weren't trying to make this crazy statement, but, you know, there's obvious parallels between, you know, Father Milton getting kicked out of, you know, the community that he feels, you know, is the most important thing in his life. Zane gets kicked out of, you know, the community that he feels, you know, they both get ostracized and they both handle it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of like duality and parallels between like, you know, the religious community and, you know, the metal community kind of treating metal and treating, you know, it all as kind of like, you know, a religion, you know, right. So to speak. So that's really, it's just like two, you know, divergent stories that converge, you know, essentially in the third act that are very similar and just happen to kind of, you know, evolve in different ways.
All right. And kind of mirror each other. Nice. I dig that. Yeah. And then also, Charlie, when your character came in and you had such a fun character too. Like I didn't know how big your role would be in this, but you ended up, you might've honestly had my favorite character in the movie. I mean, it was just
man.
And it's just this guy like taking care of his son, and he calls him like Dark Lord Danny, and you're like, yeah, the doctor replaced mommy's heart with a septic tank, and just fucking everything, man. It was so
your
funny.
Intro, because I was watching the movie because you're the only person I've ever known to be in a movie, you know. So like, it's awesome. I was waiting for you, yeah. And then like, there's this person with this like mullet, like showed to the camera, and I'm just like, okay. And then you hear your voice, whatever, you know, the longer hair.
Yeah.
I hear the voice, I'm like, I know that voice. Oh, that's, is that true? And then you have this like amazing turnaround where you turn to the camera and shit, like.
Yeah, it was really cool because when it first premiered in Iowa theater, and I went to go see it, I brought my cousin from Milwaukee, and like, that scene had happened, and then I like showed up at a different scene, and she was like, "Wait a second, that's you!" And I'm like, "Yeah, what? Did you not notice that was me?" But yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah, what was the was there a question?
I think we're just like, "Hey, it's cool to see you in
cool
a movie.
Fucking scene." Yeah,
yeah, it was. Yeah, it's a really cool entrance in an intro, and it was, it was fun to. I thought my intro was really cool, and obviously it kind of sets the tone for who I am in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or who Ryan Rammer is.
Ryan Rammer. Nice. Yeah, just too busy, can't deal with anybody's bullshit. Yeah, you've got so much on your plate.
Yeah. But still loves his kid.
Still, yeah.
Loves my kid. Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Loves the kid. And then I just.
I really loved that scene, seeing it done, because you know, like you play a scene in your head a million times, and even after like filming, I still play the scene in my brain, just because it's like one of those things where it's like, what choices could I have made or whatever. The whole, like, even it was super long monologue originally, and it ended up getting cut down, I think, a little bit. But I don't, should I not say that, Tim?
No, okay. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. You want. It was all me. There's a reason it was cut down, because I feel like I went maybe a little too slow on it. But it turned out, Mike Zach did a really good job, like, cutting it down to make it seem. I mean, he made me look a lot better than maybe my acting ability at that time, or what I was putting out. So yeah, it was fun.
Good. It's a job of a good editor, yeah, I guess.
Job of a great editor. Really good editor.
Yeah.
Really happy with his editing abilities.
Well, it's tough though. I just love, you know, long takes. I love doing a master shot if I can.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not like super into, you know, chopping everything up a million ways and you know, 24 style editing, you know. So it was on a lot of these scenes, you know, minus like the action in like the third act, they play out in a master, you know. And I think that scene in particular, Charlie, you're talking about, was like just a slow dolly, and you did the whole damn scene, right? You know, which is,
yeah,
you know, it seems like it should be like a usual practice, but anymore, I mean, like, sometimes people are just cheating lines here and there, and, you know.
Yeah. And it was really fun. Like, it was, I mean, I kind of do that turn around and you see me, and it's like, you immediately are like, this dude's interesting. You know, like, I have this like crazy look in my eye, and it's so funny because I look at that person and it was like one of these things where I'm at the premiere of the film and I'm like fishing for compliments at the end of the movie. And like, because of the way I look now, no one came up to me, was like, great job in the film or whatever. Like, they just didn't think I was in, like, they were like, whoever this Ryan Renner was, he's here, he's been gone, he's not around, because I met literally like maybe five people in the cast, like, because I because of time constraints and budget constraints, I came and filmed for like 13 days, and 10 of the days I think I was working, and I just like said, a lot of the times I said my lines to Tim and the producer Sam, and maybe like another person reading the lines to me. Right. So I'm like acting to nobody in some of these scenes, just because of timing and budget constraints. So it was really interesting to have to do that and kind of know where I needed to be or like what I needed to do. It was cool.
Well, so I'm kind of curious about some of the next sequences, because you kind of get a lot of. You know, this is about the time where Father Kilborn transforms into this monstrous figure. And then you also get this cool, like, little animation segment that, like, yes, when they're talking about Nicaragua back in the 1970s. So I'm curious about Father Kilborn's design and kind of where that came from, and also the inspiration for this animation sequence. Are you an animator, or I assume somebody working with you was an animator and was able to create that cool sequence?
Yeah, so a couple things. So, Kilborn's design came from a company out of LA called Immortal Mass, and the guy that played Father Kilborn, Trent Johnson, he suggested them. He's in the haunt industry. He's got a big haunt called Dark Chambers in Eastern Iowa, which, you know, haunted attraction. You go in, you know, in September, October, and you know, they do their thing. So he knew the company did some great silicone work, and we just got like a generic mutant like variant of theirs and did some kind of weathering to it and painting, and kind of did our own thing to it. And then obviously had the robes and that kind of stuff tailored. The animation, I'm glad you asked. I've done a lot like podcasts and radio interviews and all sorts of things, and no one's asked me about this. So
really, that's okay.
Yeah, so that sequence, it's been coming up in reviews because people are saying it's cool, and I agree, yeah. It's awesome. That sequence at the first test screening or private screening that we had back in like October 2018, it just dragged for me. And I felt it dragging like when, you know, the audience was in there. I mean, it's a compelling monologue, but it needed something to like send it home because it's such a big moment, right? Like Father Brennan is trying to appeal to, you know, Milton's better senses and basically, you know, kind of show him that, you know, fire and brimstone revenge isn't part of God's plan, right? Milton takes the completely wrong, you know, take from the story, like a lot of people do with the Bible. But yeah, so what we did is I actually had someone create kind of like cover art-esque images, and they were separate from the animator. The animator that did it, and I don't know his name off the top of my head, I should know it, but it would be in the credits. He did these animation sequences for Queens of the Stone Age. Okay. When they came out with their 2009 record, which I love, and I can't think of the name of that right now either. but I know it's their 2009 record, which is weird to know. But so he did. I remember seeing that, and he like animated all these different stuff in the booklet of the album. And I was like, that's really cool. Like, I wonder if he could do something similar if of this existing art that I already had created for the film. And he did. And he did an amazing job. Like, he cut out the pieces and did all the stuff, and we sound designed it. And it basically, like, the whole idea behind that scene is it's, you know, elevating the scene, obviously, adding a little production value, telling the story in a more effective way. And then also, you know, it's basically like metal cover art come to life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the same artist that drew this stuff, not the guy that animated it, did the same art for the Graham Incinerator lyric video at the end of cool.
It's really interesting because I was like looking for Tim for a person to animate out here in LA, and I like was in talks with people that like I knew people that I know people that, like that work on Bojack Horseman and things like that, so I was like talking to that kind of company that does all of those because they all kind of seem similar, and man, it is expensive, and an animator is very expensive, and so I think whoever Tim chose like was like perfect for it. Like they did a good job, just like kind of the best of both worlds, and it turned out really well. I really like that scene. I like it's great because I saw how it started and how it finished, and it's like such a better scene now with the animation. I think it was a nice little add to the film.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Well, and I'm curious about all of the band name, like Grandma Incinerator, and are these like are all the names of the bands, are these names like you've considered for metal bands, or are these actual like local bands in the Iowa area, or where do these names come from?
They're kind of Easter eggs for people that are metal fans, to be quite honest with you. Like Withered Christ, for instance, there's only two actual fake bands. It's Withered Christ and Graham Incinerator in the movie. Mm-hmm. Withered Christ is a riff on one of my favorite bands called Rotting Christ. Okay. That's not too far off. And then, Graham Incinerator is a riff on a grindcore, like deathcore band called Infinite Annihilator. So not just kind of a riff and kind of a wink at people that listen to, you know, extreme music. Mm-hmm. But you know, obviously both funny. Mutilated by Zombies is an actual band, believe it or not.
Okay,
nice. So is Telekinetic Yeti. I mean, like, you know, you'd think that it was all bullshit, right?
Right.
You know, but no, I mean, that's there's just been so many metal bands, people are running out of ideas, you know. They just gotta come up with whatever. No, I mean, Mutilated by Zombies, I've known those guys for a really long time. Josh, the lead guitarist and vocalist, he's such a cool dude. And those guys are great. They do technical death metal, and they've released a couple records that you can find. And I've done a music video for their latest album like three years ago, and that turned out great. And Telekinetic Yeti, Alex Bauman, he's the lead guy in that. They've been getting a lot more attention since making the film. They've been going on tour with, like, I want to say, like, Higher and Fire and Sleep, you know, when they could do touring. And then the band that actually, so the guys that portray Graham Incinerator, the older guys, those are basically like friends. One of the guys is actually an executive producer on the film, Neil Cap. Nice. He's just this quiet dude that loves making movies in Iowa, you know. but Neil's lives in California, best. But he's got a house out here now too. And Neil's something else, man. He was like, you know, in the movie, executive producer. He was like a super PA / grip, and throughout the movie, he was great. But the actual music for Graham Incinerator was actually done by this bigger band called Legion. Mm-hmm. They're on Metal Blade Records, and they're, I mean, as good as it comes when you're, you know, if anyone listening is into metal, they do a brand of progressive death metal that is just like crazy technical and awesome, and they're coming out with a new record soon. They did a great job doing that. I mean, anytime I've watched it, you know, I've seen the movie like 100,000 times, it feels like. I still watch through all the credits just because of that song. I love that song so much.
Yeah.
You know, and the lyrics are so, you know, hysterical and funny. And I don't know. I always thought that was a fun thing, watching movies growing up, is if a movie could figure out a way to trick you into enjoying the long list of talented people that, you know, are required to make a movie like this. So I thought that was a, you know, cool thing that we kind of put, you know, on cherry on top.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and so before we get into the, kind of the back, you know, the last third act of this movie, you know, typically when we talk about movies, we're pretty loose with spoilers. We assume anybody who's listening to the podcast has already watched the movie. But I don't know if you guys have any feelings. So I don't know if you guys have any feelings about talking about the last bit of this movie, or if we want to tell everyone, like, stop the podcast now, go rent this movie, like, go stream this movie, yeah, and then come back.
Yeah, definitely watch it. If you haven't watched it yet, like, go watch it. Come back to the podcast.
Yeah.
But I'm down to talk about it. I don't know about Tim.
I don't give a shit. And they can go rent it. They can go torrent it. I don't give a shit. Just go watch
it. Go watch it.
Yeah, go rent it.
Figure out a way, you know. If they're still listening,
rip it on LimeWire.
Kazaa, get it on Kazaa.
If there's BearShare,
Napster,
you know, they got to be interested, right? So if it, you know, just watch that shit. And then
if you've lasted this long in the podcast, you've seen it, or you need to go see it.
Right. Yeah. So like right before, I just like the sex scene. There's some really funny. Like, I like how it cuts to the guy's like, oh, she's not coming. And then it cuts to her, and she's like, oh, I'm coming. and then one thing, there's this line that's like barely audible, but it sounds like she says like, give me your hot little baby is what it sounded like to me. I was like, Jesus, is that what she just said?
No, she says, give me your big hot load.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, which is close.
Right. Yeah, and there's all the blood spurting out. Yeah, that scene was pretty funny, I thought.
That was like an extremely raunchy sex scene, I will say that. Yeah. I was like, whoa! There's the one scene where it's like, she's just like riding him, and I'm like, yikes! Here we are!
Can I tell? I'm going to tell a story from the world premiere, please. If you don't mind, Charlie. If we got time. Okay. It's a little tangent. Yeah. It was your cousin, right? That came down to the world premiere.
Ashley, my cousin Ashley.
So his cousin Ashley came to the world premiere. She was like in the area, or I forget exactly how it worked, but she ended up being there. She was in the audience. She came to some bars after, because we were celebrating, you know, world premiere. It was at Spooky Empire in 2019, October 2019, which is like a big horror con. They do a festival component. Anywho, we're all kind of at a bar. It's like, I think it's like 2, 3 a.m. And we're kind of like talking about the movie. And she chimed in. She's like, you want to know what my favorite part is? And we're like, what? And she was like, it was the sex scene and the blood that came on, you know, on her back.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, because it really be like that, you know? Like, you really don't know what the hell's going on back there. when you're in that position.
Actually, she told me that. She told me that, actually.
Oh, no. And Charlie's like, no, I don't want to hear this.
No, I don't care. I don't give a shit about that stuff.
That's hilarious. Well, yeah, and then so this third act, it's just, seems like it's just kind of a gleeful, the Father Kilborn is just kind of attacking people, ripping babies out of pregnant women and throwing symbols into guys' chest. And it just, I'm curious, did you have I assume you had a special effects team. Have they worked on other stuff before? Or how did you accomplish some of these effects that you had, especially at the end here?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah, so we had an effects team, the guy I was talking about from the Haunted House, Trent Johnson, and his right-hand man for the Haunted House, Brad, they did the majority of the effects, save for a couple different things. So, have they worked on other movies before? Not really. Mm-hmm. Have they worked on practical effects in Haunted House sets? Yes.
I gotcha.
So... they were very well versed in, fake blood, squirting out. Like Trent's got, for whatever reason, in the basement of his haunt, he's got because I think back like 5 years ago, there was like a 5 or 6 years ago, there was a really good deal on fake blood. So he ended up buying like 50, like 4 gallon buckets of fake blood. So he's got all this fake blood because he's like, well, it's not going to dry up like this, the stuff. This is made out of, it's going to stay good forever. So he had all that. So that's a good thing, right? That's good. You got the job, basically, right. on our budget. But no, his instincts were really good. There was only just, a little bit of learning curve when it came to he was very good at both him and Brad are very good at doing effects when it came to physical sets, which is great because in a haunted house, it has to – any effect has to pass the eye test from any angle, right? Mm-hmm. He just had to kind of learn, okay, well, how do we place the camera? How do we use the camera to our benefit? And, throughout the course of production, which a lot of the gore and stuff was kind of more towards the end of production, we kind of ramped it up as they learned and as we kind of went. And they knocked it out of the park. The sequence... I wish I could have given 2 days for this, but the sequence at the smokestack, where everyone's getting killed while Telekinetic Yeti's playing, and the joke is the music's so loud they can't hear.
Right.
I gave him a full 12-hour day to basically kill, as many people as he wanted to, as creatively as he wanted to, just go haywire with it, have fun with it. And I wish we had the budget to do 2 or 3 days, because we killed a lot of people there, as seen in the big wide shot.
Right.
But man, think if we had 2 or 3 more days, how fucking utterly ridiculous. I mean, it's already ridiculous, right?
Yeah, they get pretty insane. Yeah.
Just five fucking John Wick's just just crazy. But they did a phenomenal job with, especially with the budget they were given and the resources they were given. You couldn't have asked for a better special effects team.
It's really funny because Trent, he put on all of that, I kind of get reminded of, I don't know if you've seen, I Think You Should Leave, but season 2 where he puts on, Carl Havoc puts on all that shit and he's like, I don't want to be here anymore. Well, that's Trent, for 10 days where he puts on Father Kilborn's outfit. And then he has the most Iowan accent I know of anyone I've ever met in my whole entire life. He is the epitome of Iowa to me. So while we were filming it, he's doing all Father Kilborn's lines in this Iowa accent. So in my death scene where get thrown down an elevator shaft, he's doing all these lines with me, and he's like, I can't even do an Iowa accent. He's like, and he will show no mar, whatever. And I'm
Naming all the Slayer albums.
Such a funny thing. We were cracking up the whole time filming it. And poor guy, dude, he had there was one, Tim, wasn't there one time when Trent suffocated, or he was suffocating in a scene where he almost passed out?
I, Yeah, I basically waterboarded him with fake blood.
Oh, Jesus.
In the sequence where he's, like, coughing up blood after he falls on the altar. We're kind of skipping ahead a little bit, but...
Sorry, yeah.
No, no, you're good. I basically told him to, like, say stop when it was too much, which doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense when you're pumping blood into someone's face.
Right, yeah.
But I was tired, and it was a long fucking day, and I just wanted to get the goddamn shot. And I was the best man in his wedding, right?
Okay. You know,
if there's anybody that's gonna, you know, waterboard him with blood, I was like, I, you know, I'll make sure you're okay at the end of the day. Don't worry, man.
That's hilarious. Well, I'm glad glad he ended up okay.
Yeah.
Glad he came out on the other side. And I don't want to keep you guys too long. I know we're up against the hour here, but just really the other part, man, just Charlie, when your character comes back, just and the Deus Ex Machina, right? The van, you come in and
yeah.
It's just so funny. And your the son, what's he say? He's like he's like, is this how we kill him? And you're like, yep, son, that's what we're doing now.
That's interesting because that is actually that sound bite was actually on a different day. Jimmy didn't know what was going on, and because I was just like driving a van onto a curb.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what we were picking up. Were we picking up sound there?
We were shooting the interior. We had to shoot the interior with Jimmy before.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Before he left, because he had 3 days on set. So, like, on the third day, we're, like, filming the interior of the scene. So, like, literally everything you see is, like, different times of, like, it's so crazy how Tim was able to make this happen. But, yeah, so we're filming the interior with Jimmy to, like, say his lines. And I'm just driving up and down a curb. So I'm just, like, going up and down. He's just like, what are we doing? You know, like, oh, that's – the other thing is Jimmy got huge stage fright when we said action. So, like, everything we did – it was so weird manipulating a little 5-year-old to, like, do the right – to, like, say the right thing.
I've done that with 3 kids now, so –
Yeah. So, like, we were just like, hey, we're just practicing right now. We're not going to do much. Like, on the first day, it was really, really rough. And so we kind of, Tim and I were, like, talking and a couple other people, and we're just like, hey, what do we do here? And I was like, let's act like we're just practicing, and then we'll do one take, and we'll already have it shot,
mm-hmm.
and we'll do a tail slate, and that one shot will be like, oh man, you're a one take champ, Jimmy. Like, good job, dude. You just did it on one take. You're insane. You know, like, so we were doing that. And so, like, between the takes of me doing it, he's like, what are we doing right now? And I literally am just like talking to him regularly, like, oh, we're running him over right now. So we're going to keep running him over back and forth until the cop or whatever. Like, I don't know what I was saying, but whatever it was, I was legitimately out of character. I was legitimately right. Not Ryan Rimmer right there. I was like my nephew's uncle, like letting him know what was going on in the scene. Right. And that was, I was surprised when that made the cut, but like, obviously I feel like it fit so well.
Oh yeah. That's, I think it's one of the funniest lines in the movie. Like,
yeah.
It's a little Mike Zach magic right there. I remember the private screening, the first screening, Charlie, you were like, I wasn't supposed to be in there. I don't know if we should keep that in there.
Yeah.
Something along that line.
Yeah, and I was like,
take it up with Mike, because that was my instinct too, but he's going to bat for it, and I'm glad it did, you know?
Ultimately, I mean, I did do like a full page of notes. I felt bad doing it. And Lara's like, you have no right to do this. And I was like, I'm gonna, because I'm an insane person. but yeah. So I like sent Tim notes. I obviously like had no right to do that, but I'm glad Tim took it with a good chin and
right.
at least read them, whether or not he addressed them or not. You know, right. But like when I watched it in Iowa, I was just like, holy shit, this is awesome. Like, I was so pumped. About the film. It was so great.
Yeah. Well, I really, sincerely enjoyed it. It's such a fun movie. Well, do you have thoughts on headcanons, or I can go first?
Well, I'll just say this. I want to say this first.
Yeah.
My favorite scene in the film is when Grandma Incinerator, he pulls out a this dude pulls out a cigarette and he goes, "This isn't our first rodeo, honey." And like, just that, even because I was there behind the camera when that was being shot, and I was just like, what a beautiful, beautiful shot. Like, it's just so gorgeous. Like, the shot itself is so beautiful. Him, he pulls out the cigarette, he goes, "This isn't our first rodeo." Or, well, I forget even what the fuck he says, but when I saw
Doesn't
it,
matter.
I was like, that's going to be my favorite.
This isn't our first bar fight, little lady.
That's okay, it, yeah. That's it. That isn't our first, this isn't our first bar fight, little lady. And he pulls out, he just blows a cloud of smoke, and I'm just like, even seeing it shot, I'm just like, I knew that was going to be the take. I knew that was going to be in the film. And I was like, that's going to be, that is such a sick line. I was so happy for that. And that dude was like, kind of so chill. It was so nice. Like seeing it, like, it just looked good. All right. That's it. Headcanon. Let's go.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead with my headcanon, and then you guys can kind of give you guys a minute to prepare and think about yours. But, I kind of had a couple, you know, I thought of one and then I thought of another one. My first one is that, you know, Kilborn pulls the fetus out of the pregnant woman, which to me seems out of character for this like uber religious fire and brimstone preacher. So I have to imagine that afterwards, after the movie's over and he comes back, he wakes up in the EMT, the ambulance or whatever, there's maybe a sitcom about Father Kilborn raising the fetus, you know, kind of like Three Men and a Little Baby style, but it's this mutated monster and this fetus. And then my other thought was kind of along the lines of a sequel where, you know, Father Kilborn would, I don't know, maybe crash the DNC or go somewhere where he thought all these sinners were and just like start slaughtering people. And then the Republican Party really embraces him. They're like, oh yeah, that's what we want. But then, so they raise him up through the political ranks, and but then they
a montage of like his political career over the course of 6 years, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and they
Father Kilborn.
Yeah, and they think they can control him, but no, they can't. They and he just gets away from them, and he turns on them for their vices, you know? So. That was my headcanon for what happens after the movie ends, you know.
I'll go next. I like it.
Yeah.
Brent, you said you want to jump in, Brent?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mine's about Ryan Rammer.
Okay.
Ryan Rammer, at some point in the movie, he steals Father Brennan's cross, and he like wears it as a belt buckle instead. You know? He's like scrawled like in like the horizontal part of the cross, you know, like this ain't my first rodeo. he tells a bunch of people at bars that he was once in a mass murder event, but people don't believe him because it's months before the story comes out.
So just kind of like in real life, he tries to tell people, "Yo, I did this thing," and everybody's like, "No, fuck you."
Yeah,
I did.
Oh
it.
Yeah. I'll save the best for last with Charlie, and then I'll chime in because it's so I'll just say, so my headcanon is like the idea that I had for a sequel, which I don't think there's going to be, and if there was, I'd probably do something different.
We'll see.
Yeah, getting a lot of, you know, Bloody Disgusting did the review today. I don't know.
Nice.
So after, you know, it's all said and done, you know, credits roll and the ambulance and all that good stuff. Fast forward 5 years later, Ryan Rammer, who seems to be, you know, we seem to be focusing on him as a central character because, you know, Zane and Mirai's, their stories have kind of wrapped up. Ryan Rammer seems, you know, like maybe there's a little something left here. He's signing books for his book, The Holy Saturday Metal Massacre. He's got subsequent albums that are basically telling the story of the book. It's like a companion album to the book, right? Mm-hmm. He made a whole like concept album. Danny is not interested in metal whatsoever, but his dad has drug him to the mall to help him, you know,
like
basically... Yeah, basically ward off droves of fans that he's expecting. And it's also Black Friday, by the way. He's gearing up for the crowd on Black Friday. So him and Danny are butting heads because Danny has no interest in metal. He has no interest in music. Meanwhile, the last 5 years, Father Kilborn, who escaped the clutches of the ambulance metalheads and went off, has found, kind of like you were saying, Corey, has found a group of individuals that have embraced him,
mm-hmm.
His apostles, and people that are just as crazy and in the fanatical religion as he is. And he has baptized, during the course of this new movie, he is baptizing these people individually, and they are getting mutated with their own look and powers.
He's baptizing them in the toxic waste?
Toxic waste site.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, cool. you could imagine that, like, each one has their own, like, you know, yes. religious item that maybe someone's using, the incense things as, like, nunchucks and stuff, and, like, you know, right. all these different, you know, religious iconography.
Yeah,
things
somebody's just got a fish and some bread.
Stuff out a candle with.
Yeah,
old motherfucker from the 700 Club, or the 800 Club, or whatever we do.
Wait, so Charlie, are you saying somebody just has Pat Robinson as a weapon, like over his shoulder?
Pat Robinson has mutated. I don't know if he's dead or not or whatever. I don't know how
yeah.
he's gonna
like,
live. But,
what's it like that weapon in Kill Bill that chick has that, like the ball with the spikes, but instead
yeah,
it's a ball.
Yeah, like the mace
like,
on the chain.
Dentures yeah. like around it.
Some Palo Santo inside of it.
Hell yeah.
So beyond the setup where Kilborn is taking his fleet of apostles to this mall to wage war on Black Friday on the sinners that are going there to shop, and then also his arch nemesis Ryan Rammer, who is there to sign copies of the book and concept album that nobody
just
wants.
So happened to be there.
Yeah,
just
that
so
nobody wants. That's basically where the story converges. So you expect the first act, like the first film was, is kind of the same thing, you know, setting up the dominoes and knocking them down in acts 2 and 3. So I don't know how it finishes up. Ryan Rammer's got some good way to dispatch him at the end, but I don't know what that is.
Would it kind of be inspired by like Dawn of the Dead, kind of taking place in the mall and just like tearing through droves of?
I always thought it'd be funny that we don't really know when Death to Metal takes place, but like mm-hmm. if Kilborn and his apostles showed up to the mall to like kill all these people on Black Friday. And there's like nobody there because no one goes to malls anymore. You know, it's just like dead. It's like a dead mall. Like all the stores have closed. So they're like just like looking for anybody to like kill because just enough times pass where it's just like no one goes to malls. Like, and that's kind of the joke. You know,
that's
you're
funny.
Expecting this huge bloodbath, and obviously because of budget constraints or whatever the fuck, you know, it's just like, now there's like fucking 15 people in this mall.
Right. There's just like,
I would
there's...
love us to get a real big budget and really do a lot of kills though. That'd be really sick.
I like the idea that they go to this mall and there's like one old guy doing laps past all these closed stores, and it's just like one guy getting.
Or like if you're in California, there's like old Korean women who like just jog through the mall all the time, constantly.
And they're spry as fuck too. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, Charlie, what's your headcanon? And then I want to. So
I always have this like fan fiction idea that like before I was thrown down an elevator shaft. Father Kilborn spit into my mouth, and that I somehow am also like, I have like a little bit of a superpower. Like I'm sort of this like Tommy Jarvis of like the Friday the 13th, like
okay.
is to this movie, but I'm like a little more mutated. I have like this weird mutation because obviously I get like this extreme fan in my back, and then there's this like scene that I actually wanted really bad to shoot, and I think the cinematographer also wanted to, where at the end of the movie after the credits roll, I come home and I take my wig off and I'm bald, like I'm just like this bald man, and I'm like losing hair because there's like throughout the movie like the wig looks great, and it looks really good, but like no one's buying it. No one's buying it. No one's buying that it was my real hair. So it'd be like this hilarious, like me setting down, like the sequel starts with me like coming home and like setting down this like huge, my wig, and I'm like balding, and then like people think that I'm at fault for this accident because it was my show and like things like that. And like they don't see Father Kilborn, so they don't think that that existed, because why would they? And then it falls into like Tim's idea that's like, I'm writing this book to try to like save myself and like explain my story and that this actually happened. No one believes me. And then this like gang of religious extreme figures come and just like cause extreme havoc, and then I'm like slightly mutated and can like fight him off, and there's like just some extreme, to me it's like these extreme things that would just be so funny to me. I mean, yeah, you could really go with the movie, the way the movie was set up, you could really go anywhere with the second film.
Raise Father Brennan from the dead or something.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's like insane things that are just like, if you had the right amount of money, it could just be like such a funny, because here's the thing about the first movie is like, we do, it is kind of like Hellraiser, where it's like we spend the first act kind of setting up what Hellraiser is. Mm-hmm. But then you get into like the second film of Hellraiser and Hellraiser 3 or whatever, but you kind of get the idea. It's like Pandora's box has been opened or whatever. So it's like one of those things where it's like, we know it now. There's no backstory anymore. It's just like murder. It's just like gore murder and like ridiculous lines. And like, it's so funny because one of the things I'll mention, because I really love this guy a whole lot, is I went to a coffee shop while I was like in Dubuque, and I saw a picture of Robert Zadar, a signed copy, and he's from Dubuque, and I love him in like Time Cop and like all the like Samurai Cop. Maniac Cop. And he's like one of those like dudes that I'm just like, it's so interesting that Robert Zadar is
he's the guy with like the squarish face.
The chin.
Yeah. Okay.
He looks like Jay Leno ate like another Jay Leno.
Yeah. It's like two Jay Lenos have morphed in together.
And stuffed him all in the cheeks.
And he's from Dubuque, Iowa. And so it's like really cool to like film this movie that was like, to me, I was like in this coffee shop, my brain was just like melting. I'm like, I'm in this weird like vortex of like, because we knew what we were making. We knew like Tim, myself, the crew, we knew what we were making. We were making this like bizarre, campy, beautiful, like everything about it is beautiful. And I wrote a review on it, like a fake review on it on Amazon, where I'm just like, it's literally starts with like these like Iowan locals who like fill in on the spots, and like it makes it such an interesting film to see these Iowa locals who have fairly no experience acting doing like these really funny roles.
Tim is like the Peter Jackson of Iowa.
There's like a couple dudes.
I'll take it.
I forget that one of the dudes in the band is like making fun of the shirt. He's like such a good natural actor that I kind of want to see more of him. You know, like there's people like in it that I'm like, as an like just a random ass dude, you came and you killed it. I absolutely, there's things about that I absolutely love. So, I mean, I'm so happy with the film. I'm so happy to shamelessly promote it. I don't care.
Whatever.
If you hate me because if you mute me on Instagram because of me trying to push out my film that I was able to be in, okay, fine. I'll leave you alone forever. But like, legitimately, we did something that isn't done. It's not done anymore. Like, it's never done. So it's like, it's cool.
Yeah. No, it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I would definitely recommend it to anybody. You know, and this is typically the part in the podcast where we kind of ask you guys what you have to plug, what you want to, you know, point people toward your social media. I think fairly obviously we want to point everyone toward Death to Metal, on whatever streaming service they prefer. But is there anything else you guys want to mention before we wrap up here?
More to come.
More to come.
Yeah, I'm Tim, cooking. Tim's I'm got cooking some out in Iowa. Yeah.
Working on the next feature.
Yeah. There's already footage in the can too. Oh, so wow. We shot a week worth of stuff in September. I'm not going to talk about the story or anything else beyond that, but we're working on stuff out here, and
if it's you want to find,
yeah, it's good. A fun
I read
one.
The script. It's good.
Charlie, are you in it at all? Charlie, are you taking part? Can you tell us that?
We don't know. I'm not going to answer that yet.
All right.
Just gonna have to wait and see.
The title is Charlie's Penis, though.
Yeah, it's my micro penis.
It's kind of like Charlie's Angels, but not at all. Totally different.
Yeah. Completely different this time. It only goes on Bibles.
For next week, we're going to be covering the Bruce Willis classic Die Hard. It's going to be our first of two Christmas episodes. Now, I know what you're thinking. Hey, headcanon, Die Hard isn't a horror movie. Well, we're going to be examining... first, if it's a Christmas movie, because there's a lot of debate around that. And then I also read an interesting article where the author was making the argument that Die Hard was a slasher film, or kind of a reverse slasher film, where the protagonist, Bruce Willis, plays the role of the slasher, and the terrorists all take on the role of the slashed, the victims in the movie. So I'm not going to say whether we find it to be a Christmas movie or whether we find it to be a slasher movie, but give it a watch, look at it through those lenses, and you can see what conclusion we came to on next week's episode. As always, you can follow us on social media, on Facebook at Danger Explosion Presents Headcanon, on Instagram at HeadCanonPod, on Twitter at HorrorMoviePod, or the subreddit r/HorrorMoviePod.
Well, thank you guys so much, Charlie. It's a blast to have you. As always, you're so one of my favorite people. And Tim, it was nice to meet you. It's been a pleasure for sure. So,
yeah, thank you guys for having me. I love talking shop. So appreciate the good questions. And you know, Charlie, we should do it. We were talking earlier today that me and Charlie should link up in a month after all the reviews have come out and just do like a little fun thing where we're like recording a Zoom call and we're just reviewing all the terrible reviews because there are definitely going to be some. I mean,
right.
We got like a shitty review. We got a shitty review on Letterboxd today from also a pastor. He's also a pastor. So, oh no, we're going to get destroyed.
That's hilarious.
The pastor,
did he or she see the movie? Did the person see the movie?
I assume he saw it and he did. Yeah. Well, he wasn't wrong with a lot of the things, but it's so funny. Like the things he shit on was what makes the film good. Right. I feel like
it's
he's like cheap. I'm like, yeah, low budget indie. Yeah. You're right. It was cheap.
I'll read it.
Can you read it?
Yeah.
It's
basically words, right? Okay. And it's just like eight words. Okay. The review goes, and Charlie texted this to me earlier. It's amateur.
Oh, wait. I'm going to read, and after that, I'm going to read his Twitter bio so you guys know.
Please.
It's amateurish, cheap, cringy, crude, dumb, short, slight, unfunny, unscary. And then, you know, I mean, he didn't say he was bored, so score, right?
Yeah,
I mean, rude and dumb. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, it is. You know,
and it just like tells everybody that like they should have their girlfriend like over to watch it so they can like
Netflix some skill, right? Yeah, okay, yeah. Here I go, cinephile. This is his Twitter bio. Cinephile, empty nester, geek, Gen Xer, human, husband, independent, introvert, learner, pastor, Presbyterian, in parentheses, PCUSA, reader, theologian, Walker, West Coaster. Sick. Thanks, man. Thanks
for hope that all of his reviews are like or anything he does is just like word. Word.
Right.
Word.
Yeah.
Word.
I
hope that's what his sermon is too, right? Yeah. God. Jesus. The lamb.
I hope. Yeah. I hope that's how he speaks.
Delicious.
That's the only way.
It's weird. Oh, right. Like your movie. Christ. He's, mass.
Well, and then
huge
he's,
mass.
He's.
Make,
and then he's
love his dick. Love Christ dick.
And then he's in bed with his wife, and he's like sensual. What? Sexy, yeah. Aroused.
Why don't I, and then he puts that on like Yelp for his wife.
He reviews his wife on Yelp.
Whoa!
Oh, hey, it's the baby. Early. Hey,
nice. He's going to sleep, so I gotta go.
All right. Good night. Well, yeah. Good night, you guys. Good night, baby, and everyone. Thank you for listening. Go check out Death to Metal. This has been Headcanon.